Hey, everyone. Obviously, I am not here right now. I had to be away this weekend, so Cindy Cash has agreed to video me. So this is Wednesday. So it's still a pretty fresh message. We're in our series, At the Movies, and we've been doing this for several years. In the month of August, we take some top popular movies, and we're using them as a way to illustrate some biblical truths. It's not necessarily the way the movies were intended, of course, but we're taking liberties with them, just like Jesus did when he used stories to tell, he called parables. He used them to tell stories so that people could understand biblical truth in a way they might have missed otherwise. I have really loved the movies we've picked this month. Last week, we started the series with Black Panther, one of the Marvel superheroes, and it was a great illustration of the verse in the Old Testament, Micah 6:8. If you missed it, you can go online and find that. Today, we're doing the true story of British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and the role he played in the decisive early days of resisting Nazi aggression that threatened to take over all of Europe. The movie illustrates four things that we all need to be successful and to have God's blessing in our life. And so I want you to follow with me. You have your notes here. And also when you leave today, we have a take-home sheet you can get outside of either one of the doors that will help you dig deeper personally to make these things part of your life. The movie opens with introducing who Winston Churchill is. He's not been appointed prime minister yet, but will be soon. And there, you're going to see why few people really liked him. The reason he became prime minister, there's some political reasons, but he was also the only one that really understood the threat that the Nazis played. And he saw them as desperately evil, and he wanted to resist at all costs. So this first clip, what it does is give you a good picture of the man and his most valuable partner. Let's watch this together.
To the French ambassador. With German forces crossing into Holland, Holland alone. Come on, telegram. Holland alone requests reassurance that French forces will now move at once into to protect Belgium. Stop.
French ambassador, sir.
Monsieur l'ambassador.
Oh. They've already invaded Belgium. Holland and Belgium. I will convey your plea to the Prime Minister at once. Yes, the situation is still very confused. Yes. Goodbye.
To the French ambassador.
Don't scrap that. New telegram. To General Ismay.
What is it now?
Your son.
Randolph, quickly. No, last night they said I might be made Prime Minister today, but that was yesterday. Let's see what happens today. Yeah? Let's see what Neville does today. Yes. No, thank you, my boy. Yes. yes, keep buggering on. Now,
to General Ismay.
General Ismay. Yeah, Sawyers. Oh. Get rid of this, will you?
To General Ismay. In light of today's events, the time is ripe for many preparations to be. Are you striking those keys in a normal fashion? It's awfully loud. I can't hear myself think. Read it back.
To General Ismay, in the light of today's events, the time is right.
Right, not right. God's teeth, girl. I said right, right, right. Last sentence.
The time is right.
Four.
Many.
How many minis did you write, you nincompoop? One, many, four.
Four. Many preparations to be made.
Single space. Were you not briefed, young lady? Single space.
Someone said it on single space. And
now then, why did you persist?
Well, I
don't. Oh, God, tell Evans to send me someone who can get it right the first time. Go on, out. Right. Ta-ta-ta.
He shouted at you. Did he shout at you?
No.
He can be an awful brute.
I made too many mistakes.
I think you were nervous, and he has a knack for drawing out the very worst in those who are trying to help him the most.
No, it's not him, it's me. He's
a man, like any other.
Come on.
Dearest.
The war cabinet's been called. Bloody cat under the bed again.
My darling, may I tell you something I feel you really ought to know? I have noticed a recent deterioration in your manner. You're not as kind as you used to be. You've become rough and sarcastic and overbearing and rude.
Is this about the new girl?
If the King does ask you to become Prime Minister...
We don't know that for sure.
I don't want you to be disliked.
More than I already am.
Oh, my darling, you are on the brink of having tremendous power, surpassed only by that of the King. And with such power, you really must try and be more kind. And if possible, calm. I want others to love and respect you, as I do.
Churchill was brash, he was caustic, he was short-tempered. Pretty easy to see why a lot of people didn't like him. But one thing that they could have easily missed is that he was open to change. And that leads to this first point I want to make, and that is the idea of being approachable. It's the beginning of us having a chance to grow and to learn and to become people God can use. Proverbs 27 says, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." It's important for every one of us to invite people into our lives that will tell us the truth, not just what we want to hear, but tell us what we need to hear, whether we like it or not. We have blind spots, and it's only those that are around us that are close enough to us that can see it, that can point it out to us. His wife, Clementine, continues to be a key player in his life and a really valuable asset. You see that in the movie. We'll see it one more time in the clips we see. As the story progresses, Churchill is soon appointed to be the prime minister, but the King, King George, is not at all thrilled with this. He's not a fan of Churchill's, but he's stuck with him because there's really no other option for Britain at the time. This next clip, it's a very short clip, but it shows you just how uncomfortable both of these men are with each other. Let's watch this together.
Your Majesty.
Mr. Churchill, I believe you know why I have asked you here today.
Sir, I simply cannot imagine why.
It is my duty to invite you to take up the position of Prime Minister of this United Kingdom. Will you form a government?
I will.
Very well. Well, that was quite easy.
Yes, it was.
As these two men work together, their different styles and approaches really threaten to make things much, much worse because there are also outside forces politically that are creating all kind of tension. And you're going to see this in the next scene. What I to set the stage for this, Churchill has just given his first radio address. This is how they communicated then. This was back in 1940. And so to be able to communicate to the whole nation, they would do it over the airwaves, over the wireless is what they call it. As he addresses the nation, Churchill paints a much more optimistic picture than reality is. The picture is very bleak in reality, that Europe is threatening to fall early to the Nazis. He's trying to pump them up, so he doesn't tell quite the truth. And once the radio address is over, the king who has listened to it calls him. And I want you to listen to what the king does, because there's an important point here for all of us. Let's watch.
Your Majesty.
Don't want to take too much of your time. I heard you on the wireless.
Was I comprehensible?
The public need to be led, not misled, not left to work it out for themselves.
Right. Will that be all, Your Majesty?
Yes. Good day, Prime Minister.
Good day. I believe I have just received a royal rap on the knuckles.
The king's rebuke was important and necessary, but boy, it wasn't about, in most cases, it's not something that would make a friendship grow. But you're going to discover over time that there's a respect that develops between these two men. And part of it is because both of them, in this case, Churchill particularly, is teachable. Being approachable is important, but being teachable is really important, because that means I'm willing to change. Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Now, these two men aren't friends yet, but the building blocks are starting. You and I, it's essential that for our lives to measure up to the potential that we have, that we're willing to have this kind of these moments where we're willing to be teachable. The picture here, this iron sharpens iron, it sounds really good. It makes good posters, maybe a good decal that you could put on your car. But if you think about it, for iron to be sharpened, there's going to be friction, there's going to be sparks, there's going to be some heat generated. But unless I'm willing to be sharpened through this iron sharpening iron process, I'll never have the edge that I need. None of us will. When we resist or avoid teachable moments, it hurts us and others. And in the case of what was going on in Britain, it could have been devastating. By the way, I want you to notice this too, that Churchill never misled the people again. He didn't exaggerate. He told the truth. He was careful with it. And the other thing is, when his wife approached him and corrected him, he went back and made things right with his assistant. And she became a key ally for him as a result of him being teachable. The challenges to lead the nation have grown for Churchill. It's gotten more and more difficult. There's constant infighting. There are people that are trying to wrestle away his position. They're trying to undermine his power. The external forces in Europe are very tough, because country after country is struggling, and the Nazi machine is overwhelming them. And there is a real, real threat that Britain could fall next. The tension is real, and he feels more and more isolated. But Churchill remains adamant that he will not cave in to Germany's aggression. He regularly meets with King George. They have these weekly briefings. And in this one particular scene, some things emerge that are really surprising and unexpected. And I want you to pay attention to this, because Churchill is he's a difficult man. He's constantly smoking and drinking. And it's an aura that he has that, stay away from me. And it works for him for the most part. But the king asks him some questions, and he discovers some things about him. And I want you to listen for the honesty and the directness, but also the humility that's depicted here. Let's watch this clip.
I am unwanted. I've never been trusted since the Gallipoli campaign. I'm wanted,
Perhaps it's because you scare people.
Who?
You scare me.
What nonsense. What could possibly be scary about me?
One never knows what's going to come out of your mouth next. Something that will flatter, something that will wound.
My emotions are unbridled. A wildness in the blood I share with my father. My mother, also. We lack the gift of temperance.
Were you close to your parents?
My mother was glamorous, but perhaps too widely loved. My father was like God, busy elsewhere.
This third thing that we all need to grab hold of is the idea of being humble. Proverbs 29 says, pride ends humiliation while humility brings honor. It's surprising because you wouldn't have expected this, but Churchill is very humbly honest with the king. I like this. He says, my emotions are unbridled. He's not known for his temperance. And he's not making excuses. He's not saying, well, because of my upbringing, he's just saying, this is a factor in my life and this is the way I am. Both of the men shared some similarities in their backgrounds. And that's what really began bridging a gap here so they could become friends. They both understood some similar family struggles, and it began to build something here. This humility allows us to be approachable and teachable. But humility is this attitude that if we hang on to it, it invites others to be part of our life. As a result, the king and Churchill begin to build a friendship that allows them to work together for their nation's best. A comment Churchill made in this exchange, we're going to come back to, he says, my father was like God, busy elsewhere. It lets you know a little bit about what he thought spiritually, but I want us to revisit that because it's going to be a key thing that was actually left out of the movie later. The king and Churchill discover they have two critical things in common. They have a deep love for England, and they have a deep hatred for what they know the evil that the Nazi regime could bring. In this next clip, I want you to see how the two men bridge the divide that was initially between them. It opens with Churchill's wife, Clementine, encouraging him and trying to support him. And she's pointing out this, you've had failures in your past, but they've helped build you to the point where you're the man you are today. You've learned, you've been trained. This is your moment. And then the king will come. So watch what you see in this, because it's setting a pretty important stage for us. Let's watch.
My darling, you have the full weight of the world on your shoulders.
I know.
But these inner battles have actually trained you for this very moment. You are strong because you are imperfect. You are wise because you have doubts. Shall I let him in?
Who?
The king.
Which king? Our king?
Well, if it isn't him, it's a marvellous impersonation.
Mr. Churchill, I hope you can forgive the late hour, but your wife thought tonight would be a good time. Shall we sit?
Yes, please. Something to drink, perhaps.
I received a visit.
From?
Viscount Halifax. It appears that the prospect of a peace deal has increased dramatically.
The War Cabinet are drafting a letter to Mussolini, asking him to broker talks with Herr Hitler.
Then Halifax was correct.
I should like to know your mind.
It would be helpful to know yours first.
I should like to know it myself. Nations which go down fighting rise again, and those surrender tamely are finished.
Belgium?
Collapsed.
Norway?
Holland. France, any hour.
And the mood of Parliament?
Fear, panic.
And you? Are you not afraid?
I am most terribly. Support in the War Cabinet for the campaign of resistance has collapsed. Later today, I will address the House accordingly.
You have my support.
Your Majesty.
You have my support. I confess, I had some reservations about you at first, but while some in this country dreaded your appointment, none dreaded it like Adolf Hitler. Whomever can strike fear into that brute heart is worthy of all of our trust. We shall work together. You shall have my support at any hour. Beat the buggers.
I will go to Parliament, but without support in my own party, I must sue for peace.
You once gave me some advice. Perhaps I can give you some. Go to the people. Let them instruct you. Quite silently. They usually do. But tell them the truth, unvarnished. If invasion is imminent, if our troops in France are lost, they must be prepared.
On certain matters, I have very few people with whom I can talk frankly.
Perhaps now we have each other.
And I no longer scare you.
A little. But I can cope.
I love that. The king's surprise support and his offer of friendship gives Churchill the courage he needs to do what is facing him. You and I, we find courage when we're strengthened by people around us that are not just rah-rah people, but people that know us well, people that we trust, and when they give us their support, we know we can count on them. This idea of encouragement means to help put courage in us so we can face whatever we need to. That's why small groups are so important here at New Hope, where there are a handful of people that we know well, that know us well, that will speak the truth to us, but they'll also have our back along the way. This idea of being courageous. There's a verse here I want to point out, Deuteronomy 31. It says, "So be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid and do not panic before them. For the Lord your God will personally go ahead of you, and he will neither fail you nor abandon you." This is what Christian friends do for each other. But there's another reason I wanted to use this verse. The situation facing England was dire. I mean, the Nazis were rolling through Europe. And the British Army and the Allies were now landlocked. They're in Dunkirk, France, and they're backed up to the ocean, and they're facing imminent death. Churchill with his Navy, devised a plan called Dynamo, where they conscripted 850 civilian watercraft, and they were going to go across the English Channel to rescue 300,000 British and Allied troops. What was omitted in the movie is something that I think is a shame, and it's really important. King George, recognizing how serious things were, he had a radio address, and he called for a national day of prayer on May 26, 1940. He called all the people in the British kingdom to repent, to turn to God and ask for his sovereign help. This is a picture in front of Westminster Abbey. Millions of people throughout the British Isles responded and began praying. And remember when Churchill said his idea of God was he was busy elsewhere. Well, God was very, very busy as a result of the people praying. It's been referred to as the miracle of Dunkirk. Two things happened that were completely unexpected. One was that over Dunkirk, a violent storm came up suddenly, and it prevented the Nazi Air Force from being able to decimate the troops on the beaches. They were grounded. The other thing that happened that was a miracle is that the English Channel, the waters were calm, so these small civilian craft could come across and evacuate the troops. In the darkest hour that was happening in Britain, at the very beginning of the war, it became a rallying point, and people recognized that God had answered their prayer. And it led to a key victory when they were to rescue their troops from Dunkirk, and it set the stage for the repelling the evil and later on bringing in more allies. I'm sorry they left it out, but they did. This last clip I want you to see. They have been successful, and it is now at the beginning of this, what's going to be a long and costly war, but one where the British people have been mobilized through this man, pretty unlikely, but a man that has brought them together with the aid of his wife, the aid of the king. And I want you to listen to this speech. It's to the British Parliament. He's mobilizing them, and it built the necessary resolve they needed to work together as a community to fight off the evil. Let's watch this together, this last clip.
The British Empire and the French Republic, linked together in their cause and in their need, will defend to the death their native soil.
Aiding each other like good comrades to the utmost of their strength. Even though large tracts of Europe and many old and famous states have fallen or may fall into the grip of the Gestapo and all the odious apparatus of the Nazi rule, we shall not flag or fail. We shall go on to the end! We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender! And if which I do not for a moment believe, this island or large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire, beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue. and the liberation of the old.